castle stood above flowered terraces. Its massive fortified towers and its turrets, dormer windows and chimneys were silhouetted against the green background, and with the whole structure picked out in white stone, it appeared to have stepped straight out of a fairy tale. Looking at it now, she expected to see knights in armour with their pennants, flags and fine horses riding out to fight with their lances against the dragons that lurked in the forests or the evil which attacked good. She remembered that when she was a child, her father told her stories of such knights and how the castle they lived in was redolent with the history of France. To think of her father made her expect to see him come through one of the arched doorways and call out to her, as he invariably did when he returned home, "Yola! Yola!" No one else called her by that special name. Her father had wished her to be christened Yolande, which was the name of one of their most illustrious ancestors, but her mother predictably had insisted that every name she bore must be that of a saint, so she was called Marie Theresa. "Yola! Yola!" She could hear his voice now, echoing up to the Beauharnais flag that flew above the innumerable roofs, and which could be seen for miles round by those who served them or lived on the estate. But now her father was dead, and because there was no son, Yola had inherited the castle. For a moment, her pride of possession left her, and she felt very small and lonely as she thought how much responsibility rested upon her shoulders. How could she manage without her father? How would anything seem the same without his laughter, without the talks they enjoyed together, and the times they had ridden over the estate, glorying in the beauty of the Loire Valley? It was her father who had told her how privileged they were to live in what was called the Garden of France. It was not only the beauty of it and its mild, soft atmosphere, but the magic that made all who lived there different from the inhabitants of any other part of France. Yola had grown up not only with the tales of knightly valour, but also with the legends of Joan of Arc. She had made her father tell her over and over again how Joan had appeared and visited the Dauphin at the castle of Chinon. While waiting to be received by him, she had spent 2 days fasting and praying at an inn not far from the town. Although her mystical voices had told her that the Dauphin must throw out the hated English conquerors, the courtiers had laughed at the idea that a peasant girl could be anything but an impostor. When finally she was admitted to the palace, the great hall was lit with 50 torches and 300 gentlemen in rich apparel were assembled there. To test her, the Dauphin hid amongst the crowd and a courtier wore his robes. Joan had then advanced shyly, and immediately recognizing the future king, she went straight to him. She knelt and embraced his knees. "Gentle Dauphin," she said, "my name is Joan the Maid. The King of Heaven sent word by me that you will be anointed and crowned in the city of Rheims, and you will be lieutenant to the King of Heaven." Charles, however, was hesitant. He had always doubted whether Charles VI was really his father, because his mother, Isabella of Bavaria, was notoriously immoral and had had innumerable lovers. Then Joan said to him, "I tell you, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you are the heir to the throne of France and a true son of the king." It was all so dramatic, Yola thought, and now, because Joan of Arc seemed so real to her, she prayed for courage that she might not be afraid, but should rule in a small way as Charles had been able to do once he had been crowned king. Then, as if the seriousness of her thoughts amused her, she shook herself free of them and turned again to look out towards the river Indre. It was so wonderful, she thought, to be home after spending a year in a school near Paris since her father had died. She had not been able to return to the castle because there had been no one to chaperone her, but now that she was 18, her grandmother had left her villa where she lived at Nice to come to Beauharnais. It was the beginning of May, and the creepers climbing over the terraces in front of the castle were coming into bud. The purple-flowered wisteria was a poem of beauty, while the daffodils, hyacinths, narcissi, cyclamen, and anemones made the garden a kaleidoscope of colour. The camellias were pink and white against the walls of the castle.